Hey, how are you?
Good. Before I dive in to the regular front matter of the meeting, I just wanted to sync up. There have been conversations about screen sharing, and we don't have any. So I'm wondering if you had thought through how that might affect your presentation today.
I was not planning on using screen sharing, having experienced this working group many times, but I will share a link and you can follow on the link.
Okay, perfect. I just want to give you a chance to shuffle if you needed to, but it sounds like you're correctly prepared. Okay, let me go ahead and start on the front matter of the meeting. So welcome everyone. This is the Credentials Community Group of the W3C. Welcome. We are going to be talking about Transmutes Encrypted Data Vault implementation today. And first, I'm just going to go over our agenda. We start out with a little bit of notes, this front matter, as I called it, including going over our action items, introductions, announcements. And then the main topic really is I'll give you an update on the election and charter changes that the chairs have been working on. And then the bulk of the meeting is going to be about this implementation that Transmute's done and written about. So that's sort of that's the high level agenda for today. So the IP note, this is open to the public, so anyone can join, but all contributions are subject to the community contributor license agreement. So we have a link to that in the agenda. If you're not a member, you can still comment, you can still share your ideas and comments and input, and we want that sort of input from the public. What we can't, or what we have to be careful about are what are known as substantive contributions. The definition of that is kind of vague to me, but if we run into it, we will defer to experts and try and make a decision. But for the most part, the message there is just join the group. It's easy. The contributors license agreement isn't that big of a deal, and you can sign it without expense. You can join the group without having to pay a membership fee. So the other note we like to touch on, again, there are more details in the agenda that we send out, but we use IRC to manage the queue and to take notes and minutes for the meeting. Q plus gets you onto the queue over in IRC, and please type present plus to get your name into the attendee list. All that is useful to us. And with that, so we need a scribe. The scribe's job is just to type into IRC what people say. And because IRC is an interactive channel, people can offer corrections and whatnot on the fly. So it's pretty awesome that Manu just signed up to scribe. Thank you, Manu. Appreciate that. Okay, so I'll just move on then. I won't go on a diatribe about how awesome it is to be the scribe. Thanks again, Manu. So introductions and reintroductions. Is there anyone on the call who's new today who hasn't been on a previous CCG call? Okay, I'm not hearing. So, looks like we're old regulars for the most part. I'm not seeing any IRC handles that jump out at me as new folks I don't know yet. So, but I would like to pick someone to reintroduce themselves, because a lot of people may not have been here when you had to first introduce yourself. So, looking at the list, I'm going to go through this fairly quickly. Holler if anyone wants to reintroduce. So folks I don't think are here. Dan Pape, Dan Buchner, David Chadwick, Jarlath Akira, Joe Kaplan, Kulpreet Singh. I'm not seeing any of their names in there. Matt Stone, Michaela Casaldi, Mike Lauder. So if a Mike might be here. No Mike. Andrew Hughes, Sam Smith, Sam Chase, Matt Stone, it looks like you're here. Maybe you're just lurking on IRC. Tall Ted, are you here today? No. Bodan, Heather Vesson, Ganesh. Ganesh, are you here? And it looks like you're in IRC, but you may not be on the call. Okay, Kim, are you on the call?
I am, but I just noticed that Stephen Curran is on the call, and I'm not sure if he's introduced himself, so I nominate him.
Oh, perfect. I will take that. Stephen Curran, would you like to introduce yourself? If you're in fact present, you might be muted, Stephen, or maybe you might not actually be present. This IRC stuff is not proof of presence by any means.
Okay, I could be wrong about that.
All right, so just to move us forward, this is Justin Richer, and I will reintroduce myself so that we can just get on with the meeting.
Thanks, Justin.
So hi, I'm Justin Richer. I'm an independent consultant based in Boston, and I've done a lot of work over the last decade or so with the OAuth OpenID Connect protocols and the ecosystem surrounding that. Do a lot of work in identity and privacy. I wrote Vectors of Trust. I've authored a number of different RFCs over the years and been involved with lots of different standards organizations. And I am here in this group and the related DID working groups and the seed working group and whatnot. Working on behalf of my one of my clients, specifically SecureKey, who is very interested in doing work that kind of bridges the gaps between sort of the traditional web API space and web API development and the sort of distributed DID identity kind of space.
Excellent. Thank you, Justin. Glad to have you with us. Okay, next up then is announcements and reminders. So next week is a DID working group face-to-face meeting. Most of you who are going probably already planned for that. There is still, I believe, an opportunity to go. I'm not seeing either of the chairs on the IRC list. So the URL for that is in the agenda. I won't say more about that since I think most people have already planned for that. That's in Amsterdam. Should be interesting. Next up is Rebooting the Web of Trust. So that's RWAT 10. It's going to be March 16th through 20th in Buenos Aires, Argentina. You can sign up at rwat.eventbrite.com, which will also have further details about the event. This Friday is a deadline for early bird tickets. We've got about another month to get a topic paper discount for regular advanced sale tickets. Do we have an agenda? Yes, Moses. Same agenda as usual, but ping me offline for that if you have specific questions. Okay, and then the DID resolution calls for the task force that Marcus Sabadello has been leading on Thursday have resumed in the new year. Drummond, I see you're on, or Marcus, do you guys have any comments on where we're at with that and who might want to join you?
And Marcus is the one that's running that call now. I join occasionally, but he's the authoritative guy. Marcus?
Yes, we have resumed the calls, and we're talking about several different topics that are still work in progress in the data resolution spec. Recent topics, for example, include matrix parameters and how they're different from query parameters and why we have both constructs in TDRLs. And another topic we were talking about quite a bit is security and trust aspects of data resolution and specifically different deployments or data resolution architectures. Do you use local resolvers or are you talking to a remote service for resolution, and what does that mean for how you can trust the result and what kind of proofs you may want to add to result. And of course that's also ties in with Sam Smith's work on self-certifying identifiers and proof of authority.
Okay, great. Thank you. So those are Thursdays at 1 Pacific time. That's 2000 hours UTC, and they go for 90 minutes. And I will drop that Zoom link. Again, this is in the
minutes.
Agenda that went out. I'm sorry?
60 minutes.
Oh, 60 minutes. Oh, so we have that wrong.
Yeah.
So we will fix that in our announcement that goes out. But the time is correct, 1 p.m. Pacific and 8 o'clock UTC, 8 p.m.
Yes, the time is correct.
Okay, great. Okay, so related to announcements is a question about next week. So because next week is the DID face-to-face call, several of us are going to be traveling. And I wanted to get a plus one from folks. If you are going to be available and would like to have the Credentials Community Group meeting next week, there is no DID Working Group meeting, which is the usual precursor to this call. So in consideration of potentially canceling next week, could I get plus ones for having the meeting? Who would like to make the effort that we, in fact, have a call next week? Personally, I'm going to be traveling, so it would be easier if we didn't. Okay, well, I'm not seeing much on the queue. Yeah, chirps and one minus one. Okay, so... Kim, Chris, are we good then? So next week we won't meet? I think that's the consensus
yeah.
of the group.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Okay. So we'll send out a note just to remind folks who didn't make the call today. and we'll pick it back up in 2 weeks, 2 weeks' time. Okay, progress on action items is next up. Here's the URL that we use to keep track of this. I honestly don't know if we've updated this, so we'll just go through them. Okay, on that list, 103 scribe tool issues. Kim, I have a sense you've done something here, am I right?
We talked about it last week and there was really no resolution. So yeah, we just did not update the labels for review next. So these are the same ones we reviewed last week.
Okay, so I'll go through this more quickly and just ask if there are any updates. So the JSON LD signatures item, just jump on the queue if you have an update for any of these. That's number 97. Number 95 is I think 95 is done, actually, so we should close that out. Oh, I see Manu on the queue. Go ahead, Manu.
Yeah, just an update on the signature stuff. So, you know, based on the discussion last week, there's been a lot of movement. Christopher and a group of implementers are updating a list of links to current implementation specs and things like that. Ori has done a great job at pushing the security vocab from the DVCG over to the CCG. He's got some PRs pending there. We're working on a strategy to get that updated in more general strategy around documentation. Another individual in this group, who I won't say who they are unless they step forward and say who they are, but has started working on one of the CryptoSuite specifications. So there's movement to effectively clean up and document and, you know, update things. Behind the scenes, people are also looking into getting some of the linked data proof signature stuff funded more appropriately. There was funding for it this year, but we haven't made, you know, a ton of progress, having spent money, seeing not a lot of progress there. So we're looking at other avenues, we meaning the group of people that care about the linked data signatures, not one company, but multiple companies are looking at funding some other things in the area. So there is movement there, just so everyone knows and is up to date. Hosting a schema is still vague, and we will need to, I think, work with Christopher to figure out exactly what he would like to see there. But there's other non-vague stuff that, or at least Ori and I and a couple other folks at DigitalBiz are working on. So that's the update with respect to JSON-LD signatures and to some degree JSON-LD contexts as well.
Okay, excellent. Thank you very much. So the next one was about the 95 VC chairs sent email about CCG. So I think that happened. So I think we can close that. I'm not seeing Dan Burnett, but it went out. So I think we can just close this. Any objections to closing it? Okay, seen in the IRC, Carl, do you want to say to the group what you put in the IRC?
Yeah. Sure. I'm sorry, I'm still new to this meeting format. If it's just a small comment like that, is it appropriate for me to get on the queue and just mention it?
Absolutely. Well, go ahead and mention it. Okay. I mean, I only wanted to give you the microphone because Manu had perhaps seemed a little oblique with the reference, so I wanted to give you a chance to take credit.
Not a problem. Yeah. So, and I appreciate it, Manu, for letting me set up and say it. But we will be working on updating the RSA signature proof, and we're also looking further into concepts around consolidating some of the crypto suites that are, you know, spread across multiple specs. Thank you very much to Ori for kind of helping point out all the different locations where they're spread out, and we'll be coming back with some proposals around that in the next couple of weeks here. So that's about it.
Excellent. Thank you, Carl. Just no matter, yeah, I totally appreciate that you were intentionally being careful about that comment. That wasn't meant as a snark, even though I do love my snark. Okay, issue number 5, I'm going to go ahead and close out with a note. I did see there have been multiple emails from Dan, one, in fact, as a result of our last call. So I think this has happened. So I'm closing 95, which is great. And then, so we are going to have, this will obviously be after the DID face-to-face. And then I think, I'm hoping that Chris, since he's raised some of these JSON-LD issues, and Manu, since you seem to be in an authoritative position on where that work is, the chairs would definitely like to have a JSON-LD day where we can spend the bulk of the topical point giving folks an introduction into where that's at and where the resources are and how they can get involved and support it. Because we definitely want to support that work. We just want to make sure it's moving forward. So that's the future meeting on number 88. And then updating the CCG process is something we had a call about that last week. And I don't know if we're going to get another call this week. But it relates to the next item on the agenda, in fact. So I'm just going to move into that, assuming there's no one on the queue. Okay, so we do need to have an election, and we do need to update the charter. And so we've had some conversations about that as chairs. We don't have a whole lot yet, but the process is going to be we are going to propose an update to the charter, which will include some details about changes to the election format. So the current election format in the charter is a little bit weird. So when we clean up the charter, we'll be proposing this new election process, which the chairs believe will have a better chance of maintaining a healthy succession of leadership as we move forward. Yes, and so for those of you who want to accuse us of pulling a Putin and changing the Constitution so we can stay in power, I can appreciate the optics of that. But in fact, we're looking to bring in some new leadership and change things around. So just to give you a heads up, we're working on that. These sorts of things don't bring joy to us, so it's taking some time to push through the details and to try and just get consensus within the leadership as to what we want to put forward to the group. Then, of course, once we put it forward to the group, we're going to need some time for iteration and feedback. So we don't want to rush through this, and I just wanted to give everyone an update on where we're at. Feel free to hop on the queue if you have any questions about that. Or we could, I'd be happy to talk to any of you offline if you want more detail. Okay, so that is election and charter, which is going to leave us with over 30 minutes for transmute. So we have a EDV spec as a work item. Is that correct? Did I state that correctly? We certainly have the spec in our repo, so I believe it's a work item. And then there are also larger conversations, including with DIF and other parties, to figure out how we can collaborate on a shared specification for this critical piece of a decentralized identity architecture that lots of different people are working on in lots of different ways. We saw a Medium post by Ori Steele, who's going to present today, showing how they had implemented the EDV. And so we wanted to share that with the group. Actually, but before we do that, I want to put Manu on the spot. Could you give us a quick update on where the conversations with Ruben and DIF and W3C and some other groups are?
Sure. I can't say much more than what I said on the mailing list. So the current status is that I put DIF in touch with DIF management, in touch with W3C management to have a discussion around IPR policy specifically on whether or not it would be okay to just use the W3C IPR policy over at DIF, or if DIF could use their IPR policy, and that wouldn't create any kind of migration issues if we were to take the spec, which is expected, from DIF to W3C for standardization. There, of course, was some back and forth, not necessarily agreements from the lawyers, but I think it's going in a positive direction, but it's taking a lot of time. And there is a deeper ask that's happening as well. So I believe that Ruben is planning to update this group hopefully by the end of this week, and we should know more at that point. I can't say much more other than that because I am not in a position of management at either organization.
Sure. No, I appreciate that update. You know, not everyone reads the mailing list, so thank you for giving us a repeat of that. And in that context, you know, the sort of speak as a chair, as we can, by all means, jump on the queue if you think I put it wrongly. You know, as a community group, we're here to catalyze conversations that help move this work forward. And so I want to be clear, we are having this conversation today about a particular implementation of a particular spec, which we hope will be part of this larger conversation. So just in case it might be interpreted that we're moving ahead independent of that conversation, I want to be clear, this is a part of that larger conversation. And I'm excited that we're getting some interoperable implementations even at the earliest stages of these specifications. Okay, let me just check the queue. And then I think, Ori, we're just about ready to queue you up. Okay, so seeing no one on the queue, let me hand it over to Ori, and you can continue that introduction and tell us what you guys did.
Awesome. All right, here is the mentioned blog post. I'd like to make this as interactive as possible. Like you just mentioned, you know, this work is of interest to a number of different communities. So first, some context about, you know, Transmute. We're members of the W3C and DIFF. We have initially followed what the initial introduction that we experienced to this concept was through the Hubs concept in DIFF. And Hubs was a sort of spec around things that are connected to decentralized identifiers that might facilitate storage on behalf of decentralized identifiers. In particular, the idea is, you know, Hubs might be available online. They might take, you know, the full beating of being on the public internet. They could serve documents either in encrypted or non-encrypted form. Most of the use cases around Hubs that are talked about in DIFF are actually of the non-encrypted variant. And, you know, the idea was, like, you know, you'd have a service endpoint. One of the service endpoints in your DID document would be a hub. And you would then talk to that hub when asking for a whole bunch of different things around, you know, data regarding DIDs. That was our first introduction to it. And we, you know, have spent some time, you know, working in the DIFF on trying to move the hub specification forward. And then there was this brilliant RWAT paper, which someone should link in chat if they can, which sort of summarized the entire ecosystem. And Tobias and Manu and others were on that paper. And it sort of compared IPFS, Solid, Hubs, and encrypted data vaults. I think it's the motivation behind this working group that we're trying to establish between DIFF and W3C. I can't speak to the sort of Solid side of that space, but I have spent a bunch of time with IPFS, and I'm very eager to figure out how to integrate that system into encrypted data vaults in the future. But what we've started with and what the focus of this existing blog post is on the what we expect to be the W3C specification for encrypted data vaults. And what that means is it's a client-server architecture for storing encrypted in transit and encrypted at rest data that's authorized by a decentralized identifiers, although I guess there's potential that there might be other mechanisms associated with encrypted data vaults. So it's related to a couple of other things that you may have seen floating around on mailing lists recently. So the first thing is HTTP signatures. So our implementation that's mentioned in the blog post and which you can experience when you use the demo actually uses HTTP signatures and authorization capabilities. So there's a good chance that that will be of interest for further discussion here. Quick summary of the way that works is you as a controller of a key registered to a DID document express authorization around encrypted data vault documents and encrypted data vault document stores. You express those authorizations in terms of capabilities, and then you invoke those capabilities to perform create, read, update, delete operations on an encrypted data vault. And so our current demo actually uses HTTP signatures and object capabilities from the browser to the EDV server. That's the security mechanism for validating that, you know, this browser has the ability to update this specific encrypted data vault document. I should note, you know, authorization capabilities there's an alternative to them, which is like the traditional OAuth, you know, access token approach. And understanding how to marry that ecosystem and especially the OAuth, you know, 3 and transactional OAuth work that I know Justin's involved in, like that's a primary interest for having a working group to consolidate and share knowledge and it, like sort of lay out these things side by side so we know where things are and where we have pluggability and where we don't want pluggability, right? So I think setting aside the authorization piece, you know, the next piece to sort of talk about is the encrypted data document format. So the document format that we are using today per the encrypted data vault spec as it exists today is a JWE. And, you know, what that means is basically that we think that that's probably the a pretty reasonable, you know, encryption and coding format, I guess, for these documents, because there's lots of support for Jose out there today. There's lots of existing tooling and library, you know, support for it. And it should be relatively easy to move JWE encrypted JSON documents around. However, if we're talking about, you know, streaming encrypted data or large, you know, machine learning data sets, which I think there is vision to support in the future, we're probably going to have to figure out some other formats for that or have a deeper discussion in the working group about it. So I would say, like, that's another area that we could talk about, which is, like, you know, how do we want to represent what are we actually storing to data vaults? Are we storing structured data like a NoSQL database that just happens to only store encrypted data? Or are we storing, you know, is it more of like a file system? Do we want to be storing like really large binaries in it? And, you know, that gets into the sort of question of like, why not, you know, Tahoe LFS and, you know, why not some of the other encrypted file system extensions to IPFS and that kind of thing. So I don't want to like, you know, read our blog post to you all on the call today, but I think that, you know, I've talked a lot about the technology. I should probably have set some of the business context. I'm notorious for doing this. So the reason that we care about this technology is we're working with the Department of Homeland Security Silicon Valley Innovation Program around preventing forgery and, you know, particularly working with Customs and Border Protection around certain kinds of certificates associated with raw materials imports. And we'd like to be able to store the these certificates in some kind of standard interoperable data management system. And we think, you know, based on previous work that Manu's been involved in, that, you know, encrypted data vaults offer a good potential for that. And so that's, you know, Transmute's primary interest in the technology is using them in that capacity. We think that that's a use case that will apply to many things, not just, you know, raw materials imports in the, you know, international trade environment, but also to storing of, you know, all of these different kinds of credential formats and even potentially wallet portability. You know, so, and when I say wallet, I mean things that store keys and also things that store credentials. And so I think I'll probably, well, one other point I'd like to make before sort of opening up to questions is, in our encrypted data vaults implementation and the demo that we've provided, we had to do a lot of magic to get the keys to be used for the authorization capabilities to get that all sort of connected. And there is another standard that's or work item that's in progress here called WebKMS. And that is a thing that I'd really like to see a lot of progress on because I see it as a critical adjoining component to basically to encrypted data vaults, because the first thing that you're doing when you're interacting with any of these cryptographically secured storage systems is you're pulling keys out of some system and using them to sign and encrypt data, which you're then sending to the encrypted storage system. So I'm really eager to figure out how we can combine WebKMS with the existing implementation we have. And then another area of interest is on credential exchange sort of interfaces with this. So there's been discussion around Chappie, which is a extension for working with browsers, you know, to exchange credentials. And we're very interested in figuring out how we can integrate Chappie into our EDV DMO at some point in the future. So I'll stop there, and I'd love to sort of have a more open discussion around where are the areas of interest for encrypted data vaults, and to the extent to which I can, like, represent some of the interests within the DIF. I'm familiar with at least a few of the companies that have similar products within DIF, and I can hopefully speak to them.
Okay, great. Thank you, Ori. So the queue is open. Hop in if you have questions or comments. Ori, from your comment, Dave, we'll get you after I get this question out. Are you guys using WebKMS in this implementation?
Not in the current implementation we have today. So we have a challenge around how to represent serialized key stores that have metadata about decentralized identifiers. We have a library which we use to do that today, which is like 90% JWKS. You know, it's like almost entirely just a JWKS. It just has a little bit of extra metadata around these keys are associated with a DID, and there might be this DID public key identifier that's associated with this particular JWK. And we realize that JWK, this key store format, and we encrypt it. And that is the portability layer that allows us to have our demo work with DID key element and DID GitHub. So we use the same, you know, wallet or key store format for these keys that are registered to a DID document that are going to be used for signing and encrypting on behalf of that DID document and the data associated with the identifiers that are used to represent them in that DID document. And this is an area where we much prefer to be using an existing standard here. We'd much prefer to be using S or JWKS with some annotation instead of, you know, wallet format, the key store format that we've created.
Understood. Very cool. Well, certainly it's implementations that, like this that help us understand where we need to shift these specs to support them. So that's awesome. I saw Dave on the queue. Go ahead, Dave.
Yes. All this is great. Thank you very much for all this work, Ori. My understanding is that you guys are using the open source EDV client library in your demonstration, which gives us full interop with our implementation as well, since we're also using that open source library, which is great. And we're very interested in working on further interop goals with EDVs, with figuring out how the streaming part of EDVs work. I don't know if you guys implemented that piece. And there's more discussion to be had, as you mentioned there. We're also very interested in talking more about interop with WebKMS, both with EDVs and just in general. We are using EDVs in conjunction with WebKMS, and we're finding that to be very useful for a number of different reasons. And of course, we're also interested in interop with Chappie, wherever that may happen. So this is all great, and we're very interested in continuing to work with you guys.
Awesome. Yeah, we don't support the streaming format. The current demo supports document creation and document update, and it's basically the thinnest wrapper around the EDV client that we could demonstrate that there is a server that supports these integrations, you know, on the other side of it. So I think in terms of interoperability goals, one of the things that I'd like to sort of propose as a maybe like the gold standard for EDV interoperability would be to have a couple different EDV server implementations out there and maybe more than one client application out there, and to have some ability to sort of take your yourself and some documents on one of them, and then move yourself from that one to the other one, and then move yourself back, and then sort of feel the fact that, you know, the data, the interoperability around the data model worked, the interoperability around the serialization format for, you know, your wallet or key store files worked. That would be like, we would love to do that. One of the challenges that, you know, we had some conversations about this, you know, offline around, like, you know, you're running a web server like this, you know, on the public internet, you know, what are the sort of other security concerns that you would want? And just to sort of put a finer point on it, this is a demo that we're providing, right? Like, there's an endpoint that you can hit that will delete everything in it. I mean, it's only storing encrypted, so, you know, that's not the end of the world, but don't go using this for production data. This is a demo. I'd be interested to sort of have a broader around the concept of whitelisting as a layer on top of this. It's been mentioned in a couple communities that there's a desire to sort of standardize this concept of whitelisting DIDs for early integrations with services. And I see a natural place to do that in our existing encrypted data vaults implementation. When we process capability invocation, we're processing them on behalf of a specific DID. It would be basically trivial for us to extend it to support this concept of like a generic whitelist. And I think that might give us really high confidence that the system was not going to be abused in any way, because we could just say, you know, I know your test set of DIDs, you know my test set of DIDs, we'll whitelist each other, we can have interoperability, we don't need to worry about like some attacker and, you know, just generating a million encrypted data vaults and forcing me to continuously, you know, flush the database.
Cool. Thank you, Ori. Manny, you're next, but before you do, I just wanted to bubble up attention on Dave's sidebar. The suggestion of renaming whitelisting to allow listing, and I want to endorse that. It's a more inclusive phrase. So I'm sure most of us are going to continue, even incidentally, because we're not yet shifted over to allow listing as a normal bit of terminology. So go ahead, Manu, then, with that.
Yeah, I wanted to speak to, underscore Dave's point that this is all great work, Ori. It's wonderful to see, you know, another company pick up an implementation, implement it, and it work. And given that, you know, we're both using the same client but different server implementations, that gives us a pretty narrow thing to kind of test against to demonstrate interop, which I think is another good thing. On the topic of, like, you know, where to go with respect to, like, collaboration in the community, like, what are the highest priority things to kind of demonstrate next with EDVs? Everything that you listed is great. I mean, you know, plus one for collaborating on it, collaborating on Chappie, collaborating on multiple different server implementations, collaborating on authorization capabilities, you know, having discussions around, you know, these allow lists and block lists and things of that nature. I wanted to point out that Digital Bazaar's primary motivation for working on the encrypted data vault stuff has to do with wallet portability. And by wallet, what Digital Bazaar means when we say wallet is it is where you store your stuff, meaning your verifiable credentials specifically, maybe some binary files that are sensitive to you. It's just your, you know, it kind of feels like you're the digital version of your physical wallet. Like, you stuff a bunch of things in your wallet, receipts, loyalty cards, things of that nature. So an encrypted data vault to us is where we intend to store basically everything, that's associated with our products. And one of the most important things for us to demonstrate to our customers and the rest of the ecosystem is that you can move providers very easily. So it's data portability. So you should be able to move from one wallet provider to another wallet provider, ideally without that wallet provider being able to stop you at all, right? So, you know, power to the people and ensure that they make sure that their data is theirs at all times, and they can move it. So for us, I think the biggest thing, the biggest, I think, win that we could do, it's not the least amount of effort, but the biggest win is for us to demonstrate that we could transfer wallet providers fairly easily, which means effectively focusing on, you know, multiple server implementations for EDV, and then working on Chappie a little bit to ensure that we can move credentials into a wallet and then migrate the entire wallet to a different provider. And I think another kind of key component of that is moving the authorization capabilities stuff forward a bit. I think as an organization, we're less concerned about some of the very advanced use cases like the multi-mode replication, the decentralized updating of one data vault that then bubbles to, you know, 100 other data vaults that you might be running, between your home and the cloud and your local device. Those are all like legitimate uses for encrypted data vaults, but we'd like to focus more on the crawling and walking part before we start running. So I think that there's probably a need, and I mean this is what the joint Diff Aries W3C solid discussion is supposed to be about. It's about prioritizing these things and determining where as a community we want to go. So when we have that discussion, I think it's safe to say that we would like to focus on EDV interop, moving things back and forth, wallet migration, and authorization capabilities. Those are, I think, on the top of our list, and hopefully are the simpler use cases. And that's it.
Cool. Thank you, Manny. I put myself on the queue. I might be the only one there. To kindly push back a little bit, Manu, on your languaging around what a wallet is. One of the things, and there are some interesting naming issues around this whole thing, and naming is hard. So I don't mean to be critical as much as be constructive on these things. Christopher Allen and I wrote a topic paper for rebooting, the last rebooting that we're hoping to finish up and actually get published, that spoke about sort of how I quote unquote identity wallets and crypto wallets have some similarities, and we were trying to find some commonalities architecturally. And if you think about wallets in terms of cryptocurrency, it's pretty clear that they don't actually have the money. Your money is not in your ledger. For example, Ledger is a hardware wallet for cryptocurrency, for those of you who may not know. So to us, what popped out was a wallet is how you control access to your stuff, not necessarily this actual store which has it. A good crypto wallet would let me have Bitcoin or Ethereum or any number of tokens or altcoins, and the way that whole technology works is just not in the wallet. So I think there's something about naming of whether it's we call it a vault or personal data store, but distinguishing the interfaces that we use and the mechanisms that we use for controlling access to those stores from where the store actually is, I think will also enhance substitutability and portability. And we need it on both levels. We need the ability to move the wallet that controls everything from one provider to another. But also we need a good separation between those two things so that EDVs can move around to wherever we're most comfortable actually storing the bits without necessarily changing the front-end wallet that helps us manage it and keep track of who we gave permission to, et cetera. So that was my comment on your definitional point there, Manu. And I see Ori on the queue.
I agree with what you're saying about wallets, and I did have a conversation with Christopher Allen about, in particular, the sort of overlap between the concept of wallet and the concept of hierarchical deterministic wallet, or hierarchical deterministic algorithms for generating keys, which in turn are used in the cryptocurrency community to be able to sort of procedurally find all of the tokens that are associated with a given initial set of entropy across all of the different ledgers that you might participate on. And this is why I think that the key to unlocking this is to agree on a formation format for wallets, because or for Keith, for whatever we want to call the thing that holds material that is critical to controlling, or you know, is whatever we want to call the thing that's critical to controlling data that's associated with an identity. I don't like using the term wallet for that as much as I like the term key store, because key store sort of tells me that either these are keys that are in here or they're material like a mnemonic or entropy that's going to be used to generate an arbitrary number of keys. So the point I would make around our current library, which we use in the demo and which we consider to be sort of hacky but accomplishes the purpose, we store mnemonics, we store asymmetric keys, we can store symmetric keys in there. We don't store credentials in that thing. We use that thing to connect to an encrypted data vault, which we intend to use to store credentials. And in fact, if you dump the encrypted data vault directory, you know, structure to JSON or to something else, you've now serialized your encrypted data vault's database, and there's some ability to have portability just around taking that home with you and then moving it somewhere else. So I think there's, in terms of interoperability, one of the key sort of missing points here is how do we as a community that works with decentralized identifiers and verifiable credentials represent a serialized key store wallet format, right? And there's been some discussion with the Hyperledger folks. They have a, Hyperledger Indy has a serialization format for their wallet file structure, which is really similar to the way that we've done it. And they even have this, you know, string array tags property, which that's like, once you have something like that in your data structure, you can abuse it, you know, forever to get any kind of linking that you want. And we use that same kind of approach in our method. And then there's the JWKS format, which is like, it's about representing keys, but doesn't really have the metadata sort of associated with a general standard on this. And I've asked this question a number of times, and it just amazes me that we have so much progress on the DID document data model, and yet there's a mirror image to the DID document, which contains private key material, which we have no standardization around at all. And I've even seen places in code where people have clearly generated a DID document from things that contain private keys. So they already have some structure for doing this. But I would love to see as like one of the, and it, this is a blurry line between encrypted data vaults and WebKMS. It is the serialization format for key material. So if of all of the things that we could get, you know, some further definition around, this is one of the highest priorities for us.
Okay, excellent. Next up, Jonathan Holt.
Are there any parallel arguments for exporting, importing crypto keys in hardware wallets? Other than just like mnemonics, is there an emerging standard for interoperability?
Yeah, in a way. So I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to answer your question the perfectly, but there are, you know, with Bitcoin, you can have the Bitcoin, you know, wallet import format, which has structure to it, which allows you to sort of detect which network you're supposed to be on and that kind of thing. And then you have, you know, mnemonics, which are basically a human readable version of entropy. And they go into this HD key derivation algorithms, like BIP, well, the HD path, I forget the BIP for it. And then that path will allow you to say, give me all of the addresses that are on the Ethereum network for this entropy. And you'll get an infinite number of public-private key pairs that are integer indexed, or I think they're integer indexed. They might be able to be indexed by other things. And you'll be able to sort of discover for any given network where currencies or tokens exist on that network for a given entropy. So I think there is some sort of overlap between the concept of the Bitcoin wallet import format, but the problem with that is that it's like basically just an encoding for a specific single key. It doesn't really cover the wider use case if I want to support many key formats. And, you know, I might use the same mnemonic with different paths to generate different identifiers for different sets of DIDs, or I might use two different mnemonics to do that. Like, the way that you choose to isolate entropy and then convert entropy to key material that's registered to a DID, you have to be very careful about how you do that. Like, it's a point of correlation. It can erode your privacy if you do it poorly. And that's why annotating this kind of private key oriented key store information is so critical, because without that annotation, it's very easy for you to think, oh, like, I'll just use that mnemonic again over here. And like, you've just correlated yourself. And without something warning you saying, hey, you're about to generate a signature for a DID using entropy that's already associated with other DIDs, you should consider whether or not you want to do that. It's very hard to inform the user about those kinds of things. So did I answer your question? Could you restate it if I didn't?
No, I think it basically bit 39, basically like the hierarchical degenerated sigwallic algorithm that applied to the master entropy, is that you derive keys from that algorithm. It really is like you have a state and you derive the key from that using an algorithm. Basically, if you say like bit 39, then actually like you can reach that algorithm. So, and I think, but I'm just thinking like they're very similar to what the other proposal was, which was an API wrapping the PKCS type of into hardware wallets. So there's like, you know, all sorts of key cards that actually have what is it, the PKCS 11 and 15 sort of. So you're those. There's a standard for key management for with encoders.
Okay, we've only got a few minutes left, but Manu, you're still on the queue. I think you're going to get the last word here.
Right. So just to, I get the whole comment around like maybe we want you know, wallet format and key export formats, but we should also keep in mind that that might be a very bad idea, right? So metadata about keys is totally fine, and you know, it's private metadata and it helps anti-correlation and all that kind of stuff. That's good. But if we create formats that are interoperable that enable people to export all of their keys, if those people are not careful with the keys, which are most people, then you know it's a bad thing. So so Ori, I know that, you know, it's like, well, don't export, you know, non-exportable keys like in an HSM, but even suggesting that we should, you know, do this is dangerous, and we should talk about it. So anyway, other than that, I mean, but this is an awesome discussion. This is exactly the sorts of discussions that I'm hoping that we can have, once the DIFF W3C, you know, conversation, comes to a close and we're able to actually work on this stuff, as a set of communities. With that, thanks.
Cool. Thanks, Manu. Yeah, and I just want to know, even with the unexportable key architectures, a hardware wallet, HSM, whatever, we still don't have a format for the metadata so that we know what keys we're dealing with over there. So, yeah, we definitely still need that. Okay, with that, I think that's it. We are at the top of the hour exactly. So thank you all. Ori, thank you so much. That was a great presentation. I appreciate the engagement and feedback from the room. We will not have a meeting next week, so we'll see you in 2 weeks. Cheers, all.